Happy Christmas to each and every one of you, and welcome to Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk. While you're celebrating the festive season and choking on a chipolata, we're here to share our favourite moments from 2008. Coming up in the next half hour, we'll have some of my highlights, Tricky, Vampire Weekend, We Are Scientists and more, as well as some of Rosie's, TV on the Radio, No Age, Nas and more too. Plus, we've got live tracks that we didn't even have time to play this year. But we start with the Mercury winners. It's been a great year for Guy Garvey and Pete Turner from Elbow, the Seldon Seen Kid winning that prestigious album prize. And they joined us on the album's release in March, and what a couple of nice guys they were too. As a band, how melancholy are you all?
Well, not at all, really. We've both got the same childish sense of humour that we've always had. I suppose our tastes musically join at that point with a lot of music. We're all big softies. I think a lot of it, to be honest with you, and I've never really thought this through, especially whether or not I should say it in an interview, is down to the amount of weed that we smoked when we were growing up. We smoked an awful lot of weed, didn't we?
I didn't.
Yeah, he did.
That was the least convincing denial ever.
He still does. We haven't had a drug scandal in the band yet.
About time.
I don't think smoking a joint is much good, really, is it? I need to go heavier, I need to go further.
I think if we've seen Winehouse recently, we realise the stakes have been raised a little bit.
A little bit, jeez.
God bless her.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
Do you know what? Somebody should do an article about how hard that girl has worked over the last few years. It's ridiculous how many gigs she's done. She's an absolute trooper. You know, your record company, you're a commodity to them beyond a certain point, and they'll keep you going until you say, actually, no, I'm not doing that. But, I mean, if you've been hungry for something your whole life and you know that it's a career you're privileged to have and it's not going to last forever as well, that's the other thing that niggles you. When do you say stop? When do you say that's enough, you know? Because I don't know how she feels about that kind of thing, but I couldn't live with the regret of throwing my career towel in myself, you know. Yeah, I have to tour till I get ill before I'll say stop.
I want to ask about this because it's just consistent in almost everything you read about you. Is this real sympathy that loads of people have with you who love your music and feel that you should have sold more records? Do you have this kind of deep-seated desire to kind of crack the big time, or are you content?
All we wanted to do was make music that we really loved and were very proud of. And, of course, that changes when you have to provide for a family. You want, if possible, to get some stability for your family, and it's not the most stable game, you know. So, of course, there's more of a temptation to commercialise your music. I mean, I actually think that had we not had bad luck in terms of business, if we'd have stayed at one label for more than one album, for instance, you know. Yeah, we've just been unlucky in terms of we joined the industry at a time when it began to shift. Sleep in the Back was written specifically with being a millennium hangover in mind. We knew that there was a big nothing going to happen, you know, the scare stories about the millennium bug. And we made an album, we hoped, full of comfort and reassurance and romance. And it didn't come out for 18 months after that. And in the meantime, bands appeared in the same musical spectrum as us, you know, like Coldplay. Yeah, then that was a little irritating, tailing bands that we weren't tailing, you know. But I can't say that we're all clenching and unclenching our fists with frustration. Stockport Supporters Club kindly supplied us a choir. Your vow was your smile as we moved down the aisle on the last boat. And this is where I'll go, just when it rains.
How do you read the political situation in the UK at the minute? Are you still as disenchanted as you were with Tony a few years ago?
I'm just incredibly frustrated. Part of me thinks, you know, that Gordon Brown got into politics for all the right reasons, And I just wish his younger self could talk to him now. Whereas he's not Tony Blair. He signed the cheque on that war, and I haven't forgotten that, you know. That was the biggest public demonstration this country's ever seen, and it wasn't a home issue. It was about something happening on the other side of the world, and it was ignored. So the bunch of them can go to hell, as far as I'm concerned. Very, very disenchanted with the whole lot of them.
One place that has benefited, or has risen and kind of line with the tenure of the Labour government, has been Manchester. It's a really vibrant place, a place that's been rebuilt. What's the mood like kind of musically, culturally?
No, I think Manchester sort of does its own business. You know, its musical heritage perpetuates itself. We got support from that, the sort of the generation above us, really, didn't we?
Yeah, you get a leg up, don't you? People help each other. There's a community. There's a definite community within sort of musicians and stuff. It's
I remember Manny shaking hands with you very publicly.
Yeah, no, he was bowing to me. Yeah. I was like, Jesus, this is the chap from the Stone Roses. Do you know what I mean? Andy Rourke's always about, and he's a lovely chap.
Yeah.
And then you're there chatting to me, thinking, Jesus, you're in the Smiths. But there's no sort of hierarchy.
With the passing of Tony Wilson last year, there's almost that role of somebody who is the chief cheerleader, the torch holder for Manchester, has gone. Mm. Is there any inclination on anybody's part to step into those shoes? Or
I don't think anybody would.
I don't think anyone could, no.
I remember Tony going to a party at Atlas Bar on the end of Dean's Gate in Manchester that was for Twisted Nerve. Badly Drawn just released his first record. Mm-hmm. I played this terrible gig. Do you remember it? It was just me.
Oh, right. Ooh.
Yeah, just me and the guitar. There's only two songs I can play on me, and not very well at that. And nobody was listening. It was a real industry crowd. They were just sort of chunnering on. I actually saw some guy at the bar see a fella walking in, put his pint down, open his arms, and as they met, they both went, B Sky B and hugged each other. You know what I mean?
Are you sure that's not some Nathan Barley ironic greeting?
No, that's exactly what was going on. I remember in the middle of all this throng, I started, because they weren't listening, I started singing Wankers. Nobody noticed because no one was listening to me. And then I saw Wilson come in, and for some reason it popped into my head when I was at his funeral in Manchester, because it said an awful lot. He swept in and he knew that most of the people in that room were going, twat, you know. And then he very ceremoniously went over to where Andy Votel was DJing and bowed very deeply and shook his hand. And it was almost like a very official passing of the baton to Andy Votel, because Twisted Nerve were making such a noise at that point. We'd have cut our legs off to be on that label at that point, you know, but we weren't quite cool enough for him.
That was Guy Garvey and Pete Turner from Elbow, and, you know, thoroughly pleasant time was had by all, and if any band deserved the success they got this year, it was them. Another person who deserves any success that's going their way. It's Rosie Swash. Hello, Rosie. How are you?
Hello, Paul McInnes. I'm very well, thanks.
Good. Enjoying your Christmas time? Because we're recording this on Christmas Eve.
Yeah. Not really my ideal location for Christmas time. But, you know, I'm glad to be here doing the links for this show.
Speaking of which.
Yes.
You've had some good guests this year too.
Well, we had some good guests in February. You and I both met Vampire Weekend's Ezra Koenig and Chris Thompson at the insalubrious K West Hotel in London. Their eponymous debut album went on to be a critics and readers' fave of the year, but back in February, we had just got our first taste. So I offered my initial observation and asked them if theirs was a concept album about being privileged.
I think that's fair to say. I mean, I like the idea of it being a concept album because we wanted the songs to be unified somehow. And definitely, if there are references to privilege on the album, we hope people would think about it as being like conceptual or analytical. Like if you talk about someone taking a vacation somewhere or doing something, people think that you do it. Maybe you're just interested in talking about it or you know people who are like that. So yeah, we think about it more conceptually than anything. In front of ya, spilled coffee on your kaffir. You look inside, turn to the door, drag your feet along the floor. But I see you, you're walking across the campus, cool professor studying romances. How am I supposed to pretend?
Quite class conscious over here, and there's often a lot of a band will quite readily be kind of bracketed according to its class. Do you
worry about being bracketed by your class in the States, or does that sort of thing happen a lot less?
On a certain level, when people imagine like what the Ivy League is, you might have a kind of mystical idea of it being like everybody dressed a certain way and everybody being from some sort of like famous political family and rowing on the river and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, but our school, Columbia, is in New York City, so it's pretty different. There's like vestiges of when the school was more tied to race and class, but overall, I don't think our band actually is that associated with class, and hopefully that comes across. What I've noticed is people seem to get more interested or upset about it when they feel like a band is being dishonest.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the African influence in your music. Bands like Foles over here. Yeah, maybe not so much, but Foles, very explicitly influenced by Afrobeat, something that they've talked about a lot. Why do you think it is that those influences are sort of coming back into music after maybe 15 years of them being left to one side?
It's never fair to generalize, but if you did want to generalize about what a lot of bands sounded like the past 5 years, it would be probably a kind of like rock and roll revivalist vibe, and that whenever something becomes oversaturated like that, everybody naturally just wants to do anything but that. But also there are certain ways that it's linked to other music that people have been interested in. I definitely look up to The Clash, and I imagine a lot of other bands too, and if you just like take them as an example of always going out and exploring other music, including African music, you'll naturally gravitate towards other sounds.
What aspect of, I mean, let's say kind of Tsuku music, do you think of you most directly influenced your own sound?
Well, I think it's very specifically comes across in the guitar and the drums, because one thing about our band, we all agreed that we didn't like distorted guitar, which might have something to do with growing up in the 90s and listening to grunge a lot. So we really wanted to have clean guitars. And I think that's what people pick up on in our music, is it's such a simple thing to have this kind of clean, chimey, high guitar, but it really is evocative and makes you think of African music.
That was Chris and Ezra from Vampire Weekend, and their album, Vampire Weekend, is out right now. You've probably seen it advertised in breaks between 8 out of 10 cats. Anyway, in July, I met Tricky in the Domino Records HQ, which is based in a distant part of South London. Tricky was back with his first album in 5 years, Noel West Boy, and he was in a garrulous mood. Maybe this was to do with the album, bringing him back to the UK after several years in LA, or maybe it was just the massive spliffs he kept rolling. Anyway, it was an interesting chat, and I wanted to know, what were the things he noticed most when he came back to the UK?
Like, people living next door to each other who don't know who, and they don't know who they're living next door. And I think some of that is to do with technology, music, movies. Like, for instance, I wanted to be the Specials when I was a kid. Now, kids want to be 50 Cent. But how can you be 50 Cent when you're English? We got a different culture. When I was growing up, we were Rude Boys, right? And we all had a uniform dress, but everything was different though. So you all might wear tonic trousers, but you might wear a different colour in a different day, and a different pair of brogues. Now it's all Nike trainers, trousers hanging down the pants, around your ankles, and baseball caps. It's like we're becoming clones of America, but really bad clones. And that's why English music is dying. There couldn't be a Specials now, because these kids were individuals. Now, it's just one person. Like, Jay-Z, to me, has got no dress sense. But he wore a pinstripe shirt in a video, then kids in New York started wearing them, urban kids. Now, here, you got them wearing them. We're picking up bad habits. I'd rather pick up bad habits from my own country. And it's like a hardcore English guy, right? Could be in a bar with a gun, have an argument with someone, be so angry, and glass a guy 15 times and not even get the gun out, because it's a different kind of violence. Now kids go like this, man, that's not English violence. I'm not saying English violence ain't as bad, but it's a different kind of violence. My love's overgrown. I was growing up, you had gangster films, you had The Professional, you had Get Carter, Scarface, one of the best gangster films ever made. There's only two free pieces of violence in Scarface. Now, you get films where are shit, but someone's getting shot 20 times to keep kids' attention. Capitalism realized now they can make money out of violence. So all the video games are violent. You know, you could shoot someone 50 times on a video game, they keep popping up. 50 Cent's been shot 7 times. Takes a fear out of being shot almost. And that's starting to affect English culture and our street culture.
So do you think there is a direct link between, I mean, just to pick as an example, 50 Cent and what is going on
the streets? Not just 50 Cent. Movies, video games, music.
A lot of musicians, a lot of people in the entertainment industry, a lot of the capitalists in the entertainment industry would insist there is no link. There is no link between
definitely
people.
Definitely a link. I think there's definitely a link. Definitely a link. If my hero is 50 Cent, and I know this guy is willing to go to the street with guns, you want to be like your hero. How am I going to be like him? If I can't get in a recording studio, I got no money, I'm from a council flat, so basically I'm going to get my respect.
Is it this change in culture that's made you look back on your own youth in this album?
Yeah, in a way, because it's like, I was so lucky, man.
Do you find yourself then getting nostalgic about your youth? I mean, listening particularly to Council Estate, it's a great tune, it's raucous, and I don't get a sense of, like, happy nostalgia about that youth, even though it's a very positive anthem about, you know, making the most of yourself. But do you find yourself looking back on that time with nostalgia now?
Yeah, because we're losing it.
No.
Like, I feel sorry for the kids growing up. They missed the two-tone, they missed the punk, and they missed all this great stuff we had in England, what passed through England. You'd walk and you see Teddy Boys, you'd walk and you see punks, you Rude Boys, all this different music, all this different influx. Now the only influx we're having is American music. So it's almost like putting it down on record just in case it ends. Mm-hmm. And also, like, I would like to hope some kids would hear Council Estate and then do their versions of it coming up. They call you Council Estate, they call you Can't Go Straight, they call you Crime Rate, they call you Can't Go Straight. So it's almost like to reserve the culture. Hopefully some kids are going to listen to some of this album, and because it's very English vocal, they're going to do their vocals are very English.
That there was Tricky, whom I either caught on a good day or is actually a very nice man. But enough chat for now, on to our first live track of this show. And here's a special acoustic version of What I Have Left, recorded by Mike Bones.
I could promise you with what I have left to hold you through the night, to love you today, but maybe not the next, to leave our precious thoughts behind. I could marry you with what I have left, but I'm certain you'll do better on your own. I curse my troubled mind, it never ever rests. I can't always be alone. I have left, but it never was my intent. You will find happiness in the arms of other men, but will I be left with them? I could leave you with what I have left, Would you prefer hatred or bitterness? My soul once was blessed, but it didn't take, I guess. So I'll deal with what I have left.
Was Mike Bones with a live version of What I Have Left, recorded live in the studio. Right, coming up we have Anton Newcombe, infamous frontman of the Brian Jonestown Massacre, who I enjoyed a rather peculiar interview with in April following the release of the band's album My Bloody Underground. But before that, you will hear me speaking to Nas. And I just had 10 minutes to ask him, my favourite rapper of all time, as many questions as I could. So I began by inquiring as to what the message was behind his album Untitled, and just to warn you, you will hear the N-word.
The message is me. It's who I am, where I am, where I've been, and the unfortunate ignorance, brutality, and injustice that's still happening all over the world, specifically America.
Despite that, I have to say, I think it's a very positive album. Would you agree with that?
I mean, I'm not mad at that.
How do you feel if I'm talking to you about the album's original name and I use the word nigger to say it, even though the context isn't offensive? Does it still affect you in a horrible way?
It can't affect me in a horrible way. Well, some people are different, but if we're talking about it in that context, of course not. Not for me, no way.
I wondered whether part of the reason that you chose the original title was because I've seen you on the red carpet, you know, and you've got a t-shirt on and it says the word nigger in huge letters, and then you've got this primetime TV interviewer talking to you about it, but she won't say the word. Is that part of the reason that you wanted to bring that word back into dialogue?
Absolutely, because in this day and age we should be over the black and white thing, you know. It's just a shame that so many people are not over it and they don't know how to deal with it or address it.
I can't afford a new arrest on my folder. Nigga, breathe. In America, you'll never be free. Middle fingers up, fuck the police. Damn, can a nigga just breathe?
It's a sickness that, like, all of us need to get over. And I was told that these award shows wanted to stop nominating albums that had that word in it, and that's basically every rap album. And I agree, the word is an ugly word, but you can't just, you know, stop nominating albums overnight just because that word's in it. And you can't stop racism by acting like it doesn't exist. So I put it in the face of my peers in music. I didn't change the title. The word nigga is just not printed on my album. And if you look at the album cover, the art on the album cover, it kind of speaks louder than just putting the word nigga anyway.
Ayo, Queens get the money, niggas still screaming, paper chasing. But presidential candidates is planning wars with other nations over steak with Masons. Pregnant teens give birth to intelligent gangsters, they daddy's faceless. Play this, buy your stomach, let my words massage it and rub it. I'll be his daddy if there's nobody there to love it.
Quite intoxicated when we made it.
Do you mind me asking how?
It was a mixture of a great many things. Sort of amphetamine mixture with MDMA and ecstasy. And it was really a blast, and we'd work for about 30 minutes and be done. I mean, per song, 30 more minutes, new song.
What does it mean, Keep Music Evil? It's the name of your label.
Well, if Amy Winehouse is a saint, then fuck it, I'm going to keep my music evil. And apologize, dear listener, for my language, but, I mean, just fuck her.
Why fuck her?
I'm not gonna fuck her. She looks like a goddamn horse's ass. Really, what I think is, she's good for business. So, God bless everybody who loves her. But it seems like there's a giant treadmill of hamsters, and it's all crap.
You think people are making money from her drug addiction and her personal?
Well, I'm certainly the press, and she wouldn't be in the press whatsoever if it wasn't a story that people are interested in, pump you up to pull you down. You know, her mom's on GMT morning show talking about how she's all reformed, and I know from experience I had been a heroin addict, and it took me years to get out of that.
Well, what helped you kick it? What helped you get through?
Well, first of all, you have to have a rugged sense of individualism. And what helped me the most is, you know, seeing a couple of my loved ones just saying, you know, I love you, and this is killing me, and seeing you killing yourself. And that struck a deep chord because I also have a deep need to be loved. Now, that isn't to say that I don't do drugs, and I really don't believe any government or anybody cares what I do. I think that people have to pay for their indiscretions, and she's obviously in that process. You know, she's burned off all of her gains that she's made. Bless her, I hope, you know, Tarabi or whoever can just, like, hustle her right out of trouble, but I really like the prospect of raising my twin daughters with my wife more than doing lines with a bunch of idiots, you know, hanging out with some guy from Razorlight or some shit.
You seem very au fait with British culture.
It's our culture. It's Western culture. I mean, you're the ones nationalistic, but let me hip you to something. The Queen of England has a queen. That's a fact.
What do you mean?
The United Kingdom is not Scotland, Wales, and Ireland. St. George's Cross is the same flag as this in Denmark and Norway and Sweden and America and then the Commonwealth. That's not her.
So I didn't mean to come across as if I was being protective. I certainly didn't mean to come across as crass or rude.
Crass, rude, irreverent. I don't care about this record. Too much. I'd rather that. I mean, people can download it for free, or they can buy it, or watch it on YouTube, or buy the DVDs, or whatever, but I really don't care too much to talk about it, because evidently it's music. It's supposed to be listened to, and not to be a victim of hyperbole of somebody that's doing a mass marketing campaign. Else I would say, well, it's hotter than Pamela Anderson's tits. It's page 3 to the max. It's cheaper than 99p beans and toasts, you know, or, you know, I really don't know what else to say. I really don't care to talk about it. I mean, you should be intelligent young woman, as you obviously are, and you can make up your own opinions about it. And, of course, the listeners should, and they can say it's total shit, or they can just look into it on a deeper level, but or they can start their own band. And good luck, I'll see you on the moon. After they make more records than the Beatles released, I'm working on 5 albums right now, so I'm pretty much beyond this conversation. But God bless you all.
That was Anton Newcombe of the Brian Jonestown Massacre, one of my all-time weirdest interviews ever, and Nas, a heroic rapper, if I do say so myself. Now, I'm not alone in rating TV on the Radio's Dear Science as the best album of the year, but I'd only just heard it, just the once, back in September. I was quite taken with the quote they'd said, "We're not a band with something to say, we're a band with something to ask." So I wanted to know how this related to their album titled Dear Science.
It came from a letter that I wrote to Science. I just kind of feel like, come on, guys, like just one moving sidewalk or just solve one problem or fix one disease. I swear to God, I don't need a smaller phone and we don't need a smaller MP3 player and we don't need more defense system shit. Like enough, you friggin' brainiacs. If you have brains, try to connect them to your heart just for like a second, see what happens. The baby boomer generation, as they're called in the United States, really fucked up our chances at a lot of things and left us in a position of desperation. we are in the entertainment side of things. So for anyone to put it to us to be like, hey, what do you think the solution is? I'll be like, this is where my gripe with science comes, is that if I had a fucking brain that big and had the capacity to do that, you know, that's what I would be doing. And I think that we struggle with that all the time. And, you know, we talk about, like, you know, algae being processed into biodiesel oil and things like that, and trying to figure out a way, you know, to get involved in that. And I think that that's something that doesn't have to be, you know, public, the exact pursuits that we have in that regard. But, you know, reading about it and telling about it and opening the dialogue to include that, I think that when held up against a song like My Humps, or, you know, what have you, it's like, well, at least we know that if there is Earth in 50 years from now, and they were to look back on, did art mention its time at all? Hopefully we'll be in that regard.
And that was TV on the Radio, and I do urge you to go out and get Dear Science right now. If you are listening to us on Christmas Eve and your granny's short of a present, there you go. Problem solved. Well, I spoke to heroes of mine, the Ragga Twins, in the summer. Flinty Badman and Demon Rocco were part of the soundtrack of my youth, splicing hip-hop beats and drum and bass with their British take on dancehall chat. They were the subject of a retrospective by Soul Jazz Records this summer, so they came into the pod to talk about the music they made and their role with influential label Shut Up and Dance Records.
Coming from reggae music, we didn't really know much about. We knew about it from what we read in the paper, mainly because of the E-pills.
Yeah.
We knew that we had some people that used to come to Unity. One of them came up to Flinty and said one day, God, your tunes are bussing up the dances, you know what I mean? So what tunes? Shut Up and Dance tunes, they're killing it. Because at that time, we never used to go. We just, you know, when we started PAing, it was all right. And then gradually, the more PAs we'd done, the more we enjoyed the music and we got into it, and that was it. I mean, it kind of switched. We stopped going to reggae things and was predominantly going to dance, acid, whatever you want to call it at that time.
What are the tracks you're most proud of looking back, and which ones do you think stand the test of time the best?
Iron Lady, because that was my first ever recording on Unity.
That's your thatch bashing one, yeah?
Yeah. I was so nervous going to the studio for the first time. I'm used to turntables and a mic in your hand. Now you've got this mic just hanging down from the ceiling. And
Juggling.
I keep forgetting the name of
that. That's my favourite.
Juggling, that is my favourite track of all times.
That is a
tune. And that Chilippy Lippy Long Voice. So he was just in the studio doing Chilippy Lippy Long Voice. And that was just to warm up for him to get into lyric. But they liked it and they used it wherever we got. Even now, when we do that now in the Jungle Race, the crowd goes absolutely mad.
We are the Ragga, so we are pretty bad man. And we are the Maraca to hardcore DJ. We're bumping to go over our worries and trouble where we get to.
That was Flinty Badman and Demon Rocker, a.k.a. the Ragga Twins, and their retrospective is, as we said, out on Soul Jazz Records now. Time for another live track now. This is John Power, ex of The Lars, ex of Cast. He came in springtime, I think, to talk about his album Stormbreaker, and this is an acoustic version of his song Good Life.
Like a golden field of barley rye, our love will only ripen given time. And come the day the harvest grows, well, girl, we're gonna reap back what we've sown. You don't need to tell me, it's plain but all to see that there's a good life, there's a good life. You don't need to show me what stands in front of me. A good life, there's a good life. As we gently while the hours away, good fortune smile on those prepared to wait. And every day that comes to pass, it sure feels like it's better than the last. You don't need to show me, it's plain but all to see that there's a good life, there's a good life. You don't need to tell me, girl, sing it loud for me. A good life, there's a good life. A good life, good life. It's a
good life, a good life, there's a good life, good life, good life, it's a good life, a good life, there's a good life. You don't need to show me, it's plain but all to see that there's a good life, there's a good life. You don't need to tell me, girl, sing it loud for me. A good life, there's a good life. It's a good life, good life. It's a good life, a good life. It's a good life.
No Age are the noise pop duo from LA who were responsible for one of my other favourite albums of the year, Nouns. It's their second album, and Randy Randall and Dean Spunt have been in cahoots for quite a while. So naturally, I took them back to where it all began and asked for their first impressions of each other.
Funny story.
I'll let you start, Dean.
Thank God for that.
The first time I met Randy, well, before I met him, the first time I saw him, he was performing at this punk rock record store called Headline Records near where... I had just recently moved out of my parents' house to Hollywood, and he was playing down the street at the record store, and he was in a band called The Count, and he was playing bass, and Randy was not really playing the bass, more like punching it. I was really, really freaked out, and I met him that night, I think. It was the first time.
Yeah. I remember meeting Dean at a record store, Aaron's Records, where he worked, and... I actually bought the 7-inch of the band I just joined. I joined that band called The Count. And I remember buying it. And you're like, hey, this band's really cool. I'm like, yeah, I'm in this band.
So how did Wives come about, which was the pre-No Age?
Well, that was... Similar, so this band, The Count, was the third member that was in Wives was also in that band. And the guy Jeremy was in The Count with Randy. I was friends with him, and he's the one who sort of introduced me and Randy. And I think The Count maybe broke up soon after that show.
When was the what kind of band do you want to be in discussion?
Our musical tastes were very different. So Randy and Jeremy were into things like
Jesus Lizard,
and Shellac. And me and Jeremy together, we liked like hardcore, you know, like
Minor Threat
and like The Germs and Black Flag and stuff like that. But I don't think we really, I thought Randy liked Pavement. That being said, it wasn't like, we weren't hating on each other for it. It was just kind of like, cool, yeah, you're into like sensitive music and you like stupid, fast music.
So what's the meeting point with No Age?
The other guy in the band we got rid of, Jeremy. And at this point, me and Randy were really close friends, you know. And we decided to end Wives and keep going.
There's various terms that have been applied to the kind of music you make. And one blogger called it new gaze. What do you feel? I mean, do you think that's representative of all the things that you can...
It's well, funny.
We haven't really come out of the closet, so I don't think it's really appropriate. So.
We are new gaze.
I had the story of creation, that VHS tape that had My Bloody Valentine and Ride and Primal Scream on it, and I listened to that a lot, or I watched continuously, you know, from 14 to 27. So I've heard a lot of that music, and I spent a lot of times, you know, with the... multiple guitar tracks, you know, layering things up and having fun, getting a percussive.
But we're much more than new gaze.
But I think, so I don't know. So yeah, that
but
was
what's
just.
So that's the old gaze.
Yeah. Then now the new gaze are wearing rainbow shirts.
Yeah. The new rave. No, I think it's a silly term for sure. I mean, everybody loves shoegaze music, or everybody likes My Bloody Valentine. And I think like
there
we
was not a time though when that was true.
No,
though.
I know.
That was a very much like
when we first started. No,
you
age,
didn't like My Bloody.
I didn't really listen to them. And I remember hearing them when I was like 14, and I had the tape. I actually threw it away. I didn't even understand it. You know,
and that's what people say about you. People that don't.
Yeah, I mean, and it makes sense. But when I was 14, it was not in my radar of things to listen to. It didn't sound like music or anything. And I think once I understood that it was intentional and it wasn't just shitty. You know, I think when you're young, you put on something, you're like, this band sucks. That's like your gauge for stuff, is it good or bad. And I think as I got older, it was like, oh no, they're like subversive.
That was Randy, and also Dean of No Age. Well, you've heard quite a few of our highlights of the year, but what about the lowlight? Well, it was maybe a highlight for you listening, though I can't possibly imagine why. For me, the worst bit was speaking to We Are Scientists. If you've ever wondered what happens when you put three competitive smart alecs in a room together, well, you're about to find out. What have you learnt about the UK while you've been here?
Everything.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You know, there is nothing you don't. Do you know my bank account number?
Yes.
Oh, shit.
You don't actually want to announce it on the
No,
air.
I won't.
Yeah, let's not put
I won't,
it
don't
on
force
air.
Me 619 25.
Easy.
Stop it. Your brain thrust mastery
we're
is taking over.
You.
We're scanning.
Scanning you.
Let's go back to the UK because yeah. you said you knew everything about the UK. Mm-hmm. I don't quite believe you. But what do you like about UK music right now? Because you're quite close to the Arctic Monkeys, etc. Matt Helders has played with you for a few shows.
Mm.
Is he still playing with you?
No.
So to speak.
No.
We fired him.
You fired him for incompetence.
He messed up too much.
Not first of all. Yeah. What happened to your other drummer, Michael
we
Tapper?
We shot him into space on a mission, on a secret mission. That's all I can tell you.
On a brain thrust mastery.
I've probably already told you too much.
So, yeah, we suspect he'll be back in like 300 years. He'll still be the same age, but everything he knows will be gone.
Do you ever stop? Do you ever sit down and look at each other and go, okay, let's be sincere with each other for once? There may actually be some kind of rupture in our relationship.
We're sincere with each other.
We are very sincere.
It's
me.
Who's being battered.
You think a stranger can come into the room? No, a relative stranger can come into the room and
yeah, we have
penetrate
known each other
our inner sanctum? You're crazy, man.
Yeah, I suppose. If you actually put your most tender parts on display, then you might actually end up making some heart-rending music rather than this pop sellout nonsense that you've
heart-rending
come out with. Heart-rending music?
Uh-oh, yeah. The interview took a turn.
Who wants heart-rending music? You mean like Enya?
Yeah. She's not. She's more mystical. By the way, I'm aware that I keep asking you questions, you don't answer them, and then I move on. I will come back to them later on. What do you actually take seriously as individuals? Apart from your music, we'll take that as a given.
Yeah. Yeah, let's just accept that without really examining.
Querying it.
Yeah.
Okay. No, shall we? Shall we look at how you take your music seriously?
All
how
right.
many hours do you practice a day?
Zero.
About 0 hours a day.
Keith practiced a lot when he was a little kid.
I was a little kid. I ran those scales.
And that.
I ran those scales. Yeah, and it's all been, my skills have been degrading since then.
And how long will it take you to write an individual song, on average?
I'll give it 3 minutes.
No.
The length of the song. It's directly proportional to the length of the song.
Although there are times that we've written songs and been like, and then we just repeat that and it's done.
Yeah.
So we wrote a 3-minute song in about a minute and a half.
In a minute.
Yeah.
Why don't you think at the end of what you've done in 3 minutes, maybe with a little bit more effort, we could make this better than
that would be. That would be a different song.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then we'd have written a new song.
Yeah.
Which we do.
And we already wrote 11. That's a record. Let's go home.
But ultimately, it's like a clone in some way. You are just taking, you're taking the genesis of one track.
Well, yeah,
and replicating.
I mean, new tracks,
like
new
twin,
tracks.
Like Schwarzenegger and
Danny
DeVito. Twins.
Yeah, they're twins, but they're quite different.
Them.
Sometimes we'll sit down and write a brand new song from scratch. Sometimes we'll try to play a song that we wrote an hour ago.
Who's
we'll
your favorite band of all time?
Danny DeVito.
Danny DeVito is not a band. He's a fucking. He's an actor. He's an individual for starters.
Something
he's not
me,
a collective.
Something tells me Danny DeVito plays harmonica.
I'm bored of that
right.
one now.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. And one of the few benefits of actually being in this room with you today is that I do get to attempt to lead the conversation.
That's true.
Fair enough.
That's true.
What do you hope to learn about yourselves over the next year? Where would you like to be as individuals?
Comprehensive knowledge.
Uh huh.
Of ourselves.
Oh, of yourselves.
Yes.
Would you say that you as individuals are the greatest mysteries you've encountered?
But I wonder, am I?
Is I the greatest mystery?
And I'm broken. I really am. I am broken.
Oh, come on.
I used to enjoy this. I used to enjoy this sort of thing.
Fuck up.
It was just a chat.
When you were a younger
man. Yeah. That was We Are Scientists. And they'll probably be turning up on Mock the Week sometime soon. Okay, so that's it for 2008. By which I mean Rosie and I and producer Scott, we'd like to thank all our guests, all the PRs, the labels, the people who put grapes in the mouths of the band, everyone.
But most of all, we'd like to thank you, the listener, for tuning in.
Oh, isn't that sweet? We'll be back next week with a thoughtful, considered preview of 2009 in the company of Alexis Petridis and Tim Jones. But until then, we'll leave you with a special acoustic version of Galaxy of the Lost, as recorded by Dev Hynes, aka Lightspeed Champion.
I feel better now. I've seen you, but deep inside my bones feel like timber. I am shaken from the tension. I will shudder at the hate to think what would happen if I started to drink like you. Maybe I will loosen up. Pour me another gin. Got so down, my neck will burn as we kiss, and I'm sick in your mouth. Lick my open. Add some ice and choke on my sick vice. Whoa, girl, the lights are all on. Trapped in bed as the poison slowly creeps and stops me dead. Should have known better than to cave into such fantasies. Got so down, my neck will burn as we kiss, and I'm sick in your mouth. My open wound and add some ice and choke on my sick vice. Whoa, girl, the lights are all on. Ha ha ha.